Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Zahida Rashid, welcome to the Press Gazette Journalism Matters podcast. Thanks for coming on. And congratulations on winning your Index on Censorship award.
Thank you.
So you're an editor of a, until very recently, editor of a website, a news website in the Maldives. For most British people, the Maldives is really only known as a place where well-off people go for their honeymoons. And, you know, we don't know much else about it. But, you know, as I understand it, there's a sort of darker side to the kind of holiday paradise, and that's where you kind of fit in, I guess, in terms of the media side of it. So can you just tell us a little bit more about the Maldives Independent and how that fits in to the media scene in the Maldives, and how it fits in terms of free press? I mean, are there other independent media voices out there, or are you guys really the only people?
So we were started in 2004 in exile in Sri Lanka. At the time, pro-democracy protests had broken out. More than 200 people were arrested. Some were being tortured. But at the time, all of the media was state-controlled. So there was nothing coming out of the Maldives on what was going on. So the paper, it was a website set up specifically with the goal of letting the world know what was happening there. Mm. And keep in mind, there are no wire services in the Maldives. There are very few diplomatic missions. So there was a sort of an information blackout. The world did not know what was happening. And so that is our founding. So that we have a massive human rights focus because of that. And then the next year we moved into the country. We've been publishing for more than a decade now. And the past couple of years, though, have been very challenging. We've lost a member of our team. He was abducted and disappeared. Our offices were attacked. I've received death threats. Nearly everyone on our team has been arrested at least once. And I was forced into exile last year in September because of work I did for a documentary on corruption by Al Jazeera. So things, we're not the only critical or independent newspaper. There are a couple of others, but two of them were shut down through a variety of means. They have restarted under new names, but things are very bad for the Maldives press right now.
Tell us more about the kind of ordeal you've been through with your colleagues. So it's 2 years ago, your colleague has disappeared. So tell us more about that, as much as you know, around the circumstances of his disappearance and what you think may have, you know, caused it.
He was, at the time, he'd only been working for us for about 8 months, and he was a writer, a blogger, a very prolific tweeter. He was, he was known for his incredible humor. He made fun of the opposition, the government, and most, the group that was really, you know, felt the wrath of his humor was extremist or radicalized individuals. And at the time of his disappearance, there had been growing radical you know, there was concerns of a growing radicalization in the Maldives. One of his friends had his throat slashed a year before, nearly died. It's a miracle that this guy survived. Other people who were accused of spreading secular ideas online were briefly sort of abducted and their social media accounts hijacked and shut down, and forums that they were running on were online were being shut down. So and also a lot of Maldivians were leaving the country to go and fight in Syria and Iraq. So it was in this backdrop that his disappearance took place. So we believe that radicalized gangsters were involved in his abduction. But what was worrying is that we sort of, you know, we did everything we could to highlight the issue, to gather evidence of what was going on, but we had absolutely no help from the state. The police refused to acknowledge that he had been disappeared, that he had been abducted, even though there were eyewitnesses who reported a man being forced into a car and a knife being dropped on the scene. The police came and actually confiscated the knife, but for 2 years they refused to acknowledge that this abduction, particular abduction, was related to Rilwan's disappearance. And some people were arrested, but they were released after a couple of months. And as soon as they were released, they left the country. They went to ostensibly to fight in Syria and Iraq. So we believe the government, individuals, definite senior government officials, sort of protected the people who were involved in Rilwan's disappearance.
So, what's the sort of stories that you're covering, which are annoying the government and annoying other people in the Maldives? What's the sort of things that you're covering that people would rather you didn't cover?
Human rights abuses, abuses of power, corruption. Radicalization, gender issues, environmental issues as well.
And how is it all funded? How do you keep going?
We used to have a mix of sort of ad revenue and donor funding. Now it's solely donor funding.
Really? Yeah. Why is the advertising dried up?
Well, we're a very small team. We're just six journalists. We don't have any legal or administrative support, and we just don't have the resources to set up a marketing team and go look for that funding. So we're hoping, with the Index's fellowship, that to diversify our sources of revenue and become more sustainable.
What are the other sort of forms of intimidation you've experienced yourself and the team?
Well, so soon after Rilwan's disappearance, because of our activism around the issue, our offices were attacked and a machete was lodged on the door. And that same day, I received a text message saying that I would be the next one. And later, in April last year, 5 of the 7 members of our team were arrested. So everyone on the team has been arrested at least once now. And then our office was also raided by the police on charges of attempting to conspiracy to topple the government last September. And I was forced to leave the country because of threats of legal action against under a new law criminalising defamation.
And this was after the office was raided after you contributed to Al Jazeera documentary, is that right? Which was exposing corruption in the Maldives.
Yes.
So that was seen by the government as conspiring with a foreign power to overthrow them or something.
Yeah, it was labelled as an attempt at economic sabotage and part of an opposition attempt to overthrow the government.
So what is it that has kept you going and drives you on? You must have, when your colleague disappeared and you received that death threat, you must have felt very seriously that your life was in danger. I mean, what is it that keeps you going?
Well, to be fair, I'm not the only Maldivian journalist who's had death threats or who's been intimidated or harassed. My colleagues in other newspapers, one of them he was beaten with iron rods and lost sight in one eye. Miraculously survived from that particular beating. TV stations have been torched. Others have been forced shut. Other journalists have been arrested. Some have been prosecuted. No one is in jail yet, but we are heading towards that. So I think I've been inspired by their courage. I take strength from that. But also, I was quite young when I was 21 when I voted for the first time in an election, and there was the first multi-party elections in the Maldives. And it was also the first time I'd worked as a journalist. And to see the country sort of how free speech and freedom of expression can really change a society and, flourish, how a society flourishes with free speech was amazing. And I don't want to see those gains being lost.
What does receiving this international award mean to you personally and to your colleagues? Does it make a difference, having this sort of support?
It really does. So, as I said in my speech last night, the email from Index came on one of the lowest points of my time as editor at the Maldives Independent. I had been in exile for 6 months at that time. My team's morale was really low. And there were questions about continued funding for the website, and I was, for the first time since I took over as editor, I felt that was the closest I'd ever come to giving up. And the questions of how are we going to go on, and are we having an impact? So these were the sort of questions I was asking myself, and to receive that email from the Index was, that people care and that we're doing important work, and then that they can, not just the award, but the fellowship. The fellowship is going to be a year of the assistance, connecting us with the people who can help us with the challenges that we have right now. So this makes us, we don't feel so alone anymore. This recognition and the fellowship really renews our resolve to keep reporting even on the bleakest of days.
And so, is there anything that British journalists or British people in general can do to help you and your colleagues? I mean, should we still go to the Maldives for our holidays, or should we think twice about it? I mean, what do you think?
I think it's important that British people keep going to the Maldives on holidays. But I would say it's always good to find out more about the places that you holiday in, about the people who you're giving your money to. And British journalists can definitely help us, because we are quite a young country in terms of freedom of expression, and there's a lot to learn from an established democracy such as Britain, and also skills that that we definitely need, skills. So
in terms of training and that sort of thing?
Yes, training, reporting on difficult issues, also ethics and all of that.
I mean, is British journalism on your radar? Are you aware of it? I mean, we sort of grumble a lot over here about, low pay and the various libel and issues we have, but I guess it probably must seem, rather more liberal climate than the Maldives, as far as you're concerned.
Well, it's definitely a more liberal climate than the Maldives. But I have to say, British journalists have faced the kind of threats we are now, so probably have a lot to share in terms of experience of how to deal with such things. Mm. And also, we follow the British press quite closely, the BBC, The Guardian, Telegraph, Independent, all of these papers have written about the Maldives, the Daily Mail as well. So the British press can definitely help by writing about what's going on in the Maldives.
So what does the future hold for you now? You're still in exile. Can you go back to your homeland, or would it be dangerous for you to do that?
I think enough time has passed right now for me to be able to go back to the country, but if I were to go back and continue with this job and continue doing the kind of journalism I've been doing, I think perhaps it's a matter of time before charges are pressed against me. I think the current government likes to make examples of certain people, So it's a risk, but it's uncertain, as it always is.
And criminal defamation seems to be the main threat at the moment. What does that mean? How does that work?
So you get fined up to $130,000, and if you're unable to pay the fine, the journalist who wrote the offensive article goes to jail for 6 months, and the paper, which is fined separately, could... be shut down.
And what sort of articles would qualify as breaking that law, as you understand it?
So recently, an opposition online TV station was fined 1 million rufiah, which is about $130,000. And they were fined for broadcasting a speech by an opposition politician who questioned whether how much the president had achieved of his economic agenda. That is the sort of thing that classifies as defamation.
Okay, so fairly low bar. And what are you personally going to do now? You've got a new job as internet.
Yes, I have. I work at Al Jazeera right now in Doha, and it's very different to what I've been doing in the Maldives, but I'm really enjoying the downtime in some ways. It's good to be safe. It's good to not be looking over my shoulder constantly and to be learning with really great editors.
Well, look, best of luck, and thanks very much for coming on the Press Gazette podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.